Howdy guys, welcome to the In The Blues Tone podcast. It's now May 2nd, 2018. We have a whole lot of really good stuff to cover today, including some funny stuff and a little bit of drama within the actual guitar industry, as well as some of the polls and stuff I've run on my feed and videos that are kind of interesting to see some feedback from the community as well. So we'll cover all of that, and we'll also go over my thoughts on the Origin Series amplifiers and how they might compare to other amps on the market, as well as lots of other stuff. Now, if you're new to the podcast, you can also find it on iTunes. Just type in The Blues Podcast or In The Blues Tone Podcast and it will come right up. Or you can go to inthebluespodcast.com and that's easy to find. The audio usually goes up a few days later than the first release on YouTube. So keep that in mind. This particular podcast should show up maybe a little bit later in the week on iTunes. So here we go. Believe it or not, for the very first time, we actually have a sponsor for the In The Blues Tone Podcast. So welcome, DistroKid. DistroKid's a service I've actually been using since 2016 when I released my This Drive album. For those who might not have heard of DistroKid and don't know what they do, it's essentially a service that you upload your music to and they'll share it to all of the other shops and streaming services that you choose online, like iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Google Play, and just about anything else that's actually out there. So they make it really, really easy. The cool thing about their service is, as a paying customer, it's only $19.99 a year, and you get 100% of the royalties. So they're actually taking care of the musician, which can't be said for a lot of these other services. That was the main reason I went with them, because you get 100% of your earnings, and that kind of thing is pretty rare in today's day and age. One of the other really great things about DistroKid is the fact you can upload as many albums or singles as you like for that particular price. It's awesome. Some services will charge you $20 per album, so just keep that in mind. It's a really great service. I've been using it personally for years, so I can absolutely vouch for the credibility. For those who don't know, I'm actually working on a JJ Cale tribute album, and this is something that I've wanted to do for quite some time, and it's nearly finished. If I upload this to DistroKid, they'll take care of all the royalties and all of that kind of stuff, so I don't have to stress about the legal side of it, which is great. Not only is DistroKid extremely easy to use, you get to keep 100% of your royalties, which is awesome. It's already a cheap service, but if you click the link in the description, you'll get another 7% off. So check out all the links in the description below. The reason I opted into this particular sponsorship, as I mentioned, I was already a paying customer and I know it works. So if you want to find out more about them, click the links in the description below. If you're new to the In The Blues Tone podcast, I'll post time codes in the description and probably also in the chat, so you can skip ahead to any particular section if you so choose. But the first thing we're going to talk about is Gibson have officially filed for bankruptcy. Now, I'm not going to say I know everything about how that works, but there's a guy that I do trust with this sort of information. He's right into it. He understands it a whole lot better than just about everybody else on YouTube, and that's Steve from Boston. I actually watched his video and commented on it, and he's allowed me to share this on the podcast with you guys as well. So in a moment, we'll hear from Steve. But firstly, I just wanted to say this really isn't surprising. Gibson are $500 million or more in debt. They're recently getting sued from the company that made those robot tuners for their guitars as well. Supposedly, there wasn't a payment made. Wow. You go into business with Gibson, who are $500 million in debt, you would expect that you'd want to get paid up front. But obviously, that's not how it works. Anyway, it's kind of crazy. But like I said, Steve understands this a whole lot better than your average Joe. So he's allowed me to share this clip with you. Let's hear from Steve.
Yo, what's up, dudes? Just wanted to do a quick video that, according to The Wire this morning, Gibson filed bankruptcy, Chapter 11, bankruptcy protection in federal court. So I've only seen it from one news source, USA Today, but they're claiming that Gibson filed bankruptcy this morning for a reorganization. Now, just to know that Chapter 7 is liquidation. They're not liquidating, which means they're not going out of business. Chapter 11 is a reorganization, which means that they're going to shed some debt. They're going to probably sell off a few of those companies that they bought over the last few years and reorganize the company to something that's profitable. They'll prove to a judge that they're profitable, and then the judge will allow them to go through with the bankruptcy and the reorganization. That's pretty much how it goes. So we'll see what happens. Again, this is just breaking over the wire in the last, say, few minutes. Gibson files for bankruptcy. Let me know what you think down in the comments. I think we all thought this was inevitable, that they were going to file. And I've been saying for at least a year that Gibson's not going anywhere. If anything, it would be a reorg. And of course, it's a reorg because the brand is just too big. So this is probably a good thing long-term for Gibson and for people who like the Gibson brand, because at the very least, they may put in a new management team. Who knows what could happen? So we'll see. There'll be a lot more news as the bankruptcy proceeds, and we can follow all that. All right, dudes. As always, just to recap, Gibson Brands files for bankruptcy protection under Chapter 11, a reorganization. And as I get more news, I'll let you know.
Not only was Steve the first guy to post on this particular topic, he's well informed on how all of this stuff works. Unlike a lot of other YouTube channels who may not understand the complexities of this type of stuff, I know personally that Steve understands how all this works. If you're into guitar, also check out his channel as well. I'll post some links up in the cards. He's a great guitar player. He's got the best live streams on YouTube, and he knows his stuff about how this kind of thing works. So I trust his word over just about everybody else's when it comes to what's going on and how things are going to work. So yeah, check him out online. Up next, we have a little bit of a lighthearted topic. This actually made me laugh when I saw it, and I thought it was kind of awesome. It appears that Fender have actually been mislabeling their guitars. So they've got Strats that say Telecaster Deluxe on them. And I'll post some pictures of this on screen. This comes by way of Marcel here in Australia, who's also a subscriber to the In The Blues channel. And he wrote, "Thought you might be curiously interested in this headstock issue that I found myself lumbered with. Friday just passed, I got my Blues Junior 4 and a Fender Stratocaster Deluxe. Both are great, but have a look at the headstock on the Strat. It says Tally in quotations." Yeah, so he actually took the first guitar back, got another one, and it said the same thing. So there's two guitars that have actually got the same mislabeled headstocks. And I just think this looks great. I mean, it's so random and weird. The only problem you might have with it is the fact that if you tried to resell it, someone would say, is this a fake? Because it doesn't actually have the correct thing on the headstock. But at the same time, it's kind of unique. I think if Marcel's planning on keeping these, which I think he is, he's just going to put up with the mislabeled headstock. So I think that's kind of funny. Let me know if you were to find a guitar or have one that you ordered sight unseen and it turned up with something else on the headstock, like a Fender instead, like a Tally instead of a Strat, or vice versa. Would you keep it? I think that's kind of interesting and a little bit funny. Marcel continues. He says, "I'm really quite stumped. I'm yet to determine if this is good or bad luck." I just thought that was a good touch. And he said, "You might like to have a laugh about this and also share it with your 88,000 subscribers, whether or not they've had any issues with this." And he also raises a question about the QC, or quality control, and just wondered how this kind of slipped through. I guess that's just one of those things that might happen. Someone might just be having a foggy day and they're putting the wrong labels on the guitars. Who knows? But I guess, you know, maybe the headstock isn't one thing that they look at in their QC so much. Maybe they're looking more for faults and playability issues. I mean, most Fenders you pick up straight off out of the box play pretty well. Just inherently in the way that they're built. But yeah, it's interesting that these headstock things slip through. So if you've had any issues with this or you've seen it somewhere else in the world, please comment in the comments below and I'll let Marcel know. I'm sure he'll see this video. So thanks so much for the email, man. I really appreciate it. And just for those wondering, these were actually found here in Melbourne, Australia as well. So yeah, interesting stuff. All right, the Marshall Origin Series amplifier discussion is next, and let's go ahead and get into this. So, wow, all the hype. There's so much hype online about products these days, and one of the things I noticed, because I actually own the Marshall DSL-40CR, I actually purchased that before the Origin Series amps came out, and it's amazing how many times I heard, "You should wait for the Origin amps, they're going to be so much better," from people who hadn't actually played them. They were just like assuming they were going to be better because the hype was behind the product. I'm not at all dissatisfied owning the Marshall DSL after playing any of the Origin amplifiers. I'm not going to say they're all bad, because they're not, but the 5 was arguably one of the most lackluster amplifiers I've ever played. You might be thinking to yourself, well, you shouldn't expect too much from a 5-watt amplifier. but the Origin 5 wasn't great. It was okay, but it wasn't great. And I think the hype train kind of got behind a lot of these products. That's why I did the shootout between the Bugera V5 Infinium, because I felt like, you know, for a brand like Bugera to kind of wipe the floor with the Marshall would be an interesting sort of video, and it would put things in context. I can generally pull a great sound out of anything that I play. It's just the way that it is after years of playing live and testing different gear in different situations and doing shootout videos and demos and all that kind of stuff. I think I can pretty much get my sound out of anything. The Marshall 5, Origin 5 actually, wasn't a great amp at all. Someone actually made the comment, I can't remember who it is, so I apologize, but they said, I just went back and listened to your Marshall 1 DSL video, or DSL 1, whichever way you want to say that, and how that sounded so much better than the 5, and I absolutely agree. So in my opinion, the Origin 5 amplifier, I give it the thumbs down now, and especially after being able to compare it to my Bugera, there was no comparison. I'd take the Bugera 7 days a week over that amplifier, absolutely. All right, so we're gonna get into the 20 and the 50. What do I think about those? So the 20 is so much better than the 5. If you're gonna buy any of these amps, either buy the 20 or the 50, don't buy the 5. Even if you're playing at home, you can get a decent sound out of the 20 with the power attenuator, because you can actually switch the amp down twice. It will lower the wattage twice down, and you can get a good bedroom volume at home without annoying the neighbors. So that would be my suggestion. If you're just playing at home, maybe get the 20. If you're playing live at all, get the 50. The 50 is the best sounding amp by a mile. Do I like it more than my DSL 40CR amplifier? Again, I don't, but it's good. I think it's a really good amp. And the 50 is one of those amps where you'll either love what it does or you won't. It's very limiting in terms of tone. It doesn't have the full fat sort of knock of the DSL 40CR that I've got, and I kind of prefer that tone for my sound, but there's going to be a lot of guys that love that over the DSL, and that's understandable. It's all subjective stuff. I would almost say this is how it sounds to me. The Marshall kind of sounds like a Zen Drive or like a fatter Tube Screamer, and I'm just putting this into context. And the Origin amp sounds like a Klon. It's more sort of high-end and spiky in some ways, whereas the DSL Ranger amps just has this really fat knock to it, to the sound. And that's something that I particularly love, and I'm glad that I feel this way about it. Otherwise, I would probably have to go and sell this or buy another one or whatever. So for me personally, this rocks. I'm really happy. I'm not dissatisfied that I purchased the DSL 40 at all. I think it's a great amp. Now, I've never been able to get a good sound out of a DSL 40 up until this series. This series of amps, man, they're really, really great. I haven't played a lot of old ones either, but just even comparing this to the prior generation of the DSL amps, it sounds way, way better. A few people said they can sound fizzy. Turn the masters all the way up and you're good to go. Now, the Origin series amps, in terms of their functionality, are pretty good. If you're looking for a very simple amp that takes pedals pretty well, it's a good choice. There's no doubt about it. Would it ever replace my Fender? No, and it wouldn't replace my Fender for exactly the same reasons that it wouldn't replace my DSL. I prefer a fatter, thicker kind of sound over something that's kind of more... They're a really balanced amp. I give it that, but for me personally, if you know... Tone is all subjective, so it's whatever you like is the right choice. For what I like personally and to how I get my tone, I get it out of my Fender and I can easily get my same sound out of the Marshall without any pedals. So for me to go buy another amp where I'll essentially need to use it as a pedal platform doesn't really serve any purpose in my current lineup of amps. Now, one of the most interesting things about this lineup of amplifiers is the 20-watt amp has a 10-inch speaker. I really wish they had to put a 12-inch speaker in there. It really needs it. It might have changed it from being an amp that might not be loud enough to something that would be loud enough in the context of a live mix. Now, a lot of people are gonna say, yeah, you can mic up stuff and you know you can use it that way as well if it's not loud enough. And that's absolutely true. But not everywhere you play, you get a chance to mic up your amps. Or there might not be a front of house guy telling you, you know, how to set the volume or helping you set the volume accordingly. So not everyone has the luxury of being able to mic up an amp at a gig. PA system might not have any extra lines. You know, you're at the mercy sometimes of the house PA system might only have two vocal lines. So overall, what's my suggestion on buying either of these Origin amplifiers? If you're thinking about buying the 5, get the 20. The 20 sounds miles better, it takes pedals better, does everything better than the 5, and just wipes the floor with it, in my opinion. The 50 kind of does the same thing to the 20. The bigger speaker helps, having more output power helps. You could play it live and it would carry or hold its own in terms of a live mix without any actual microphones in front of it. You can then power it down to basically 20 watts as well or lower. So the 50 is the way to go. If you're a gigging musician, I wouldn't buy the 20, and I sure as hell wouldn't buy the 5. The 5 is just for people playing at home. So keep that in mind. So that's my overall opinion on the Origin series amps. I think the 50 is a good, really solid amplifier that you can use with pedals or get a pretty good sound out of it on its own. And being able to switch it down to different power levels is a really great thing. My suggestion would be just go buy that and switch it, the power down, if you're going to be using it at home. The 20 is also a really good option if you're only a home musician. If you do have the luxury of being able to mic it up, you could probably get away with it as well. But the 10-inch speaker is a little bit limiting. I really wish they had to put a 12-inch speaker in that. But, you know, this is one of those things. A lot of people like Princeton's as well. They're a great sounding amp from Fender. And they have a 10-inch speaker. But I kind of feel like the Marshall thing is a 12-inch speaker. But that's just me. So let me know your thoughts in the comments. Up next, I want to have a little bit of chat about what's coming up on the channel in terms of the recording process. So I'm actually in the Kemper Club. Did I go out and buy this? No, and that's why I wanted to let you know about what's going on. So my relationship with Sky Music is this. They sponsor my channel. They basically allow me to go borrow anything I like in the shop or shoot videos in the shop. And then I get to say whatever I like and shoot reviews and take the stuff back, or they come and collect it. So that's how that works. I don't get paid for any of that stuff. They did want to fly me to NAMM earlier in the year, but I declined. I thought, you know what, that's not really how I want to gear my channel, you know, interviewing companies and so forth. But I was appreciative of it. And a while back they said, like, how can we help you? Is there anything that, you know, you'd want in return? I said, look, the only thing that I could really see myself using a lot on the channel and on live streams would be a Kemper. And I have my hand over here. It's out of shot right now. But this is the Rack Unit Kemper Profiling Amplifier. They were nice enough to give me this. So this is a gift that I probably have to claim on tax, but it's a gift anyway. So it's great. And I was really appreciative of it because for two reasons. One, I get to record with my amp tones at any time of the day or night and have my tones very, very consistent. And also, if I shoot guitar videos, I'll be using the Kemper. It just makes life a lot easier. I can plug in and get my sound. I've profiled all of my amplifiers now, including the Bugera, the PVs, as well as the Fender on the clean channel, the Marshall on the clean channel, the Marshall on the dirty channel, and all that kind of stuff. So the range of tones is awesome. It just makes recording really easy. I now have a reference profile of my favorite settings on these amplifiers with my favorite microphone. So it's going to be awesome. But they were nice enough to let me keep this. So I wanted to let everybody know that this was a gift. I didn't go out and buy it, but I'm still going to rave about it because it's an awesome piece of gear. This is one of the few things that I was completely wrong on over the years. I always thought it was a glorified Fender Mustang, and I've said that before in the past, and I corrected myself on this on, I think, the last podcast possibly as well. Or maybe though it was the Kemper video I mentioned that, but it's a great piece of kit, and I'm really enjoying just basically the how easy it is for me now to use this. And there's a few reasons you would choose a Kemper over just recording loud guitars. And if there's one thing that shooting those Marshall amps videos all in one day taught me is my ears don't like loud guitar at full blast for hours. It's just not good for you. And if you're around this sort of stuff a lot, you really have to take care of your ears. So for me, the Kemper serves a particular purpose that I'm going to use for either basically live streaming and guitar videos. And also when I record my albums on my computer as well, I'm going to be using it for that. It's just a really great way of getting things done. Now, what am I not going to use it for? I'm not going to be using it on the pedal demos. I'm still going to be using my Two Notes Torpedo plugged into one of my amps, or just the amp without it. It just depends on the type of effect. But generally, I'm always using my Two Notes for my pedal demos, and I'll be using the Kemper for just doing guitar stuff. And there's a reason for that, and I might bring that up on another video down the track, but I feel like for when I'm using pedals, it's great to have the actual analog front end of the amp with a digital reference of the speaker with the Two Notes, as opposed to a completely digital interface. Now, a lot of people, this is one thing I wanted to correct about something I said. I said the Kemper's not great with pedals, and I've said that a few times, and that's in context to a live mix. You can use it in the studio with pedals, there's no doubt about it, but it just doesn't respond the same to how the two notes does and doesn't sound the same as the two notes, even though obviously it's not going to. But in the context of a live mix, the Kemper with actual analog pedals isn't great. You've really got to start tweaking the input load and all that kind of stuff on the Kemper. I just kind of feel like the two notes with my amps is the way I'll go moving forward with pedal demos. I just think that's a much easier option and a better sounding option and more sort of authentic in what you're hearing. And I'm not going to use the Kemper for any of that stuff, but I will be using the Kemper for guitar demos and reviews and all that kind of stuff, as well as when I'm on a live stream, I can just plug in and get a really great sound. And that's my reference sound. If you didn't see my AB videos, I'll post a link in the description and you can check that out as well. Something I'm really looking forward to is we have another YouTuber Summit coming up, and I'll just get the date for that. That will be the 11th of May. If you live in the United States, it'll be the evening of the 11th. Or if you live in Australia, it will be the morning of the 12th of May, which is a Saturday. So Friday night in the US, Saturday morning in Australia. Now, we have a few guests that you've seen before, and I'm really looking forward to this. We've got Steve from Boston, which will be awesome. I've invited the Tone King as well, who's agreed, Lewis, so thank you so much, man. Another Australian, Brett Kingman, said he'll be there, which is fantastic. Anthony from Texas Blues Alley, who unfortunately missed the last one, said he's going to make an effort to be on this one, so hopefully we'll see you there, man. I'd love to have a chat to you. I know a lot of my subscribers would love to have a chat to you as well, so that would be fantastic if you can make it. I know he has a prior commitment as well, but he said he's going to try and be there, so Anthony, if you can make it, that'll be awesome. Also being a part of this particular live stream is Andrew from the Guitar Geek YouTube channel. If you own a Boss Katana, odds are you've seen one of his videos. He's a big Boss Katana nerd and a lovely guy, so I'm really looking forward to having a chat to him as well. We also have Nick in the States joining as well, which will be awesome. Nick's a great guy. If you're into cheap guitars and all that kind of stuff, he runs a really great channel, sort of geared towards more budget gear. Odds are, if you subscribe to me, you also subscribe to him as well. I also extended an invite out to Philip McKnight. I'm not sure I've heard back from him yet, but there's still time, so he might join, he might not. So we'll see how we go with that. If there's anyone you'd love to see on one of these live streams at some point as well, please comment in the comments below and I'll reach out to them. I've actually reached out to a few people and not heard back, and some others are keen, but they couldn't make it this time. So what I'll do, we'll try and mix it up. But I like having the core there. I think, you know, between myself, Lewis, and Steve, that's a really good sort of starting point. And then we'll get in some of the smaller channels as well as some of the other channels as well that, you know, I've never had a chance to talk to. So it's fun for me. And it kind of spreads the word about, you know, other great channels you might not actually be that aware of as well. And there's always that common ground of music, and that's how I want to keep it. I don't want to just deal with guitar drama channels. I want to actually deal with people who can play, who understand gear, who love to talk about this kind of stuff as well, and have a different perspective on the whole industry than each other as well. I think we all see it a little bit differently, and that's what makes the chat interesting. We're also going to make sure we take a lot of questions this time. I'll keep my eye on the chat, as I'm sure the other guys will, and we can all just jump in and take questions. The first chat we did was awesome, but we probably didn't take enough questions that particular day. So this will be about 2 hours. I'm really looking forward to it, if that's not blatantly obvious. It's been a while, so it should be good fun. So yeah, if you'd like to see a particular guest, feel free to put their channel name in the comments below. And yeah, I'll invite them on at some point. So thank you. Now, if you've seen my videos over the last couple of weeks on YouTube, you'll probably have realized that I've put my Danny Gatton pickups back in my 52 reissue Telecaster. Now, you might also be wondering why I hadn't played that guitar a lot recently as well. It was a couple of reasons. The first reason was the nut was just wrecked. The high E, so the thinnest one, was actually basically had eaten all the way through the nut and needed to be replaced. So I had that fixed, and then I took it out to a gig and it played beautifully. Like, it actually felt great to play. But the thing was, it buzzed to no end. And this has been the problem that I've gone back and forth between single coils so many times. The MJS pickups sound great, you know, like they really do. Problem is, if I'm playing with gain or higher gain at home, it buzzes a lot. The particular venue I was playing at a couple of Fridays ago with Ryan from the channel, it buzzed a lot there. And then I played my PRS as well. I tried my Telecaster for one out of the three sets, and I couldn't wait to get back to my PRS SE. And not based on how it felt to play, but just the fact that it wasn't as distracting with the noise. The sustain on the PRS was better. And this brings me to sort of my point. I put the Bardens, or the Danny Gatton pickups, back into my 52 reissue. I noticed two things. I was a whole lot less distracted with the buzz, so I could focus more on the playing. But I also feel like those pickups add more sustain to the guitar. Between my PRS and my 52 reissue, both of them kind of feel and play very similarly in terms of how well they hang on to notes, and just the functionality of it is so much better for me personally. Now, not everyone's going to agree with that, and I've been flip-flopping back and forth between single coils now twice with that guitar, but I kind of feel like I'm done. I can't be bothered swapping them out anymore. I've rewired the guitar. It's got new pots and everything, so I think I'm pretty much done with that now. What am I going to do with the MJS pickups? I had a Patreon subscriber suggest that I just hold on to them and put them in something else, and that's pretty much what I think I'm going to do. So if I find a really good used guitar for a bargain, I'll pick it up and I'll put those pickups in that guitar because they are really, really great. There's a time and a place for single coils and they just sound amazing. But for my particular application, either playing at home with lighting and crap everywhere and electronics, or some of the venues I play at, single coil guitars are unusable. They're absolutely unusable. You know, we've got these trams that go past some of the venues, or they're like rail carts for those in the US, but they just make everything buzz. And just having that constant interference and electricity around the venues just doesn't help the single coil buzz. It's literally unplayable at some venues. So for me personally, the Joe Bardens sound great. I was really surprised going back how much I loved that neck pickup. I was like, man, that was the first one I put in. Just like, God, this sounds great. You know, like, what was I thinking? And then I put the bridge pickup back in and I was like, I'm home. It sounds great. It's now arguably back to being my favorite guitar in my collection just because of that. And it's funny how a little change, I guess a little major change to some people, but a little change like that can make such a world of difference to not only my headspace when I play that guitar, but just how it feels and responds. So yeah, for anyone wondering about those pickups, they're about as low output as vintage single coil pickups. They're not like, you know, 96K or something like that, like some of those active pickups. They're very, very low powered. And that's why they sound so great. So the Joe Bardens and Danny Gatton pickups are back in my tally. I'd be really surprised if you see me swap them out again, but who knows? I think I've probably said that in the past as well. So yeah, crazy stuff. One of the things I really enjoy doing on the channel is also making the videos and also my feed a little bit more interactive. I like to ask some questions and also poll people on what they think about a particular thing. Whether or not it's just a shootout video between two things, I generally put up a thing in the cards, which usually pops up here on the videos, and I'll just ask a question, which one do you like more? A lot of people don't like to comment, and for those who do, they usually post as well. So this is just reflection on what I see in the poll results as well. So this doesn't take into context everybody's comments, just the poll actual total. So the first video I did was the Ultimate Squire versus Fender Tele Shootout, and I asked two questions. The first one was, which one sounds better in the mix, the Squire or the Fender? 54% of the people said the Fender, 45% of the people said the Squire. So we're pretty much on par there. You know, there's a 10% difference, or 9, but it's not a whole lot. So that's pretty cool. And then I asked which one sounds better on its own. And this is where the Fender really started to shine. It won 62% of the votes versus 37%. So that was interesting. I love the classic vibe guitars. I think they're really great. And this was just one of those things I thought I would do a more up-to-date shootout with very comparable guitars, both visually and just in terms of their setup. So yeah, that was interesting. So the next one was the Peavey versus the Orange. So I did a shootout between the Orange Crush 35RT versus the Studio Pro 112 amp, and 83% of the people said that the Peavey sounded better. 83%! Versus the 16% for the Orange. I'd have to agree, I think the PV wiped the floor. Although I did kind of like some of the dirty crunch tones on the Orange, I just thought the PV was in a whole other league. Now, on my feed, I asked a particular question just from my own interest. You might notice in the guitar industry or world or online world or whatever, a lot of the actual physical shops aren't selling as many guitars these days, or brands aren't either. So I thought I'd ask an interesting question. It had nearly 2,000 votes, so that was amazing. I asked, what's your preference when it comes to buying guitars? I'm asking this as part of the next podcast I'm putting together. I want to see some accurate stats from guitarists/musicians. So the three options were prefer to buy new over used. Second option was prefer to buy used over new, or no preference either is fine. So 45% of the people said no preference, which was really surprising, to be honest. I thought it was either going to be a landslide for new gear or a landslide for used gear. And believe it or not, the percentages are basically identical for people who prefer to buy only new guitars or only used guitars. So 27% of people prefer to buy new over used, and 28% of people prefer to buy used over new, with the 45% of people with no preference. I thought that was really, really interesting. That wasn't what I was expecting at all, but I thought it was definitely worth mentioning. Here's one that relates to my last topic about the Joe Barton pickups. I was going to put them back in. So my question was, I'm trying to decide if I go back to the Joe Barton, Danny Gatton pickups in my Tele. The MJS pickups sound wild, but my room can have a lot of buzz, blah, blah, blah. What do you think? Yes, put them back in, got 33% of the votes. No, single coils rock, got 47% of the votes. And fitter set of EMGs because I like metal, got 20% of the votes. So yeah, I'm going to add that 20% back to yes, put them back in, just because that balances it out pretty much evenly. But you know, they are back in there now. I always appreciate everybody's feedback. So recently I've had about 20 companies contact me regarding cheap pedals and whether or not I'd be interested in showcasing them on my channel for you guys. So I put up a poll about this because I've pretty much cut back on the amount of pedal demos I'm doing. I might try and find a more time effective way of doing some of these videos if they go ahead. But I thought I'd ask you a question. We had 1,500 people reply to this poll already. And in terms of people wanting to see more, it was a landslide. 89% of the people who commented on this particular poll and voted yes, they want to see more cheap demos. The main reason was people think, or they'd like to find some hidden gems that aren't expensive. There's so much expensive stuff out there. Finding this more inexpensive stuff is really appealing. I think that's kind of helped what built my channel in the early days as well. So for those who have been subscribed for a long time, some of the first demo I ever put up of a pedal was the Behringer TO-800 back in early 2007, I think it was. So I've pretty much had an audience for cheaper gear. And I like it too. If I can find something that's cheap, that's great, it's cool. But one thing I'm not going to do is basically cover, say you've got the company like Kalen, right? If I see another company buy their pedals in OEM quantities or whatever and rebrand them, I'm not going to demo that. I've already done that before. So what I'll do, if I do any of this stuff, it will definitely be things that haven't been done before on the channel. I'm not going to double up. I think that's just insane. So no got 6% of the votes. So like I said, 89% of the people want to see more cheap demos. No got 6% of the votes. And I only spend $2,000 plus on pedals because I rock got 5% of the votes. I thought that was hilarious. I might post some of the comments from, there's one in particular that I'll post on screen. I'll dig it up and I'll post it. It made me laugh when I read it. I thought it was awesome. A little while ago with Ryan, I went to Sky Music and we shot a video of an Epiphone Dot versus the Gibson ES330 VOS Custom Shop guitars. So we put them back to back and we did a shootout and I asked which one sounds better. Simple question, the Epiphone or the Gibson? Now, to my ear, the Gibson sounded better. And I thought this was pretty interesting. So 39% of the people said the Epiphone sounded better. 43% of the people said the Gibson sounded better. And the third option was, I can't hear a difference, which was 17%. 17% of people couldn't hear a difference between two different guitars. And that's not to ridicule them. I think that's, that pretty much tells you a lot about how people hear things differently. It might also come down to experience levels. It might also come down to those people listening on one of these phone speakers or crappy headphones versus studio monitors or good quality speakers. So there might be more reasons why people can't hear the difference, or it might just be that you just can't hear a difference. They sound so similar to each other. But I think the more you're around gear, the more you can pick out the subtleties. But that goes to show that people that at least even watch these videos, who are assumedly guitar players, can't hear a difference. there might not be that much of an actual difference. So I found that was it. You know, the Epiphone and the Gibson pretty much were only a few percentages apart, and not being able to hear a difference was 17% of the total. So I thought that was really, really interesting. Now, the last poll that I ran was for the video that went live as of last night. Now, the poll might actually change, but it was the Bugera V5 Infinium versus the Marshall Origin 5. 84% of the people said the Bugera V5 Infinium sounded better. I couldn't agree more. And 16% said the Marshall Origin 5 sounded better. Now, better is one of those terms. I should have also prefaced this at the start. Better is all subjective to what you like. There's no right or wrong. But this will at least give you a guide on what most people are thinking. And this is why I do these polls. I like to get a little bit of an insight into what's going on, how people hear things, what people like, what you want to see more of, what you want to see less of, what you think about changes, all that kind of stuff. So for me, this is a whole lot of fun. And I thank everybody for being a part of these polls, whether it's in the cards on the video, like I mentioned, which pop up here, or whether or not it's just a poll I run on my feed. Being that the channel's the size it is, I have this really cool feature where I can run polls and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really great thing for just interacting with everybody, finding out what people like. And yeah, thank you so much for all the feedback. I hope this has been interesting. It was interesting for me to see some of these results, especially on the cheap pedal demos thing. I was shocked that 90% of people basically, was it? 90%, 89% of people decided that, or said that they want to see more cheap pedal demos. So that's what I'm going to do. I think it's really worth, you know, pleasing the subscriber base, even if a lot of people are out demoed, and I understand that as well. There's definitely things about pedal demos I don't like doing them anymore to some extent, if I've done them before. So for me, if I can find stuff that's unique, or at least unique to a brand that are producing these particular pedals, then I'll do them. So I've started replying to some of these emails, and I'll wait and see what they say. If they want to come back with it, we can go ahead and do these. But I definitely won't be putting out more than one a week. So if I get 20 pedals sent to me from one company, they're going to go up over the course of 4 months. I'm not going to put them all up, you know, in 1 week or anything like that. That would be insane. I don't want to burn myself out and get bored. So yeah, I'll definitely be throwing up some more of these pedal demos if it all goes through. So yeah, thank you so much. And I hope you enjoyed this particular podcast. My name's Shane. I know it's a little bit different having a sponsor, but you know, financially on YouTube, it's tough, man. Anyone who tries to do this and they don't charge the companies a fortune, it's not easy. So for me personally, having a sponsor that I actually trust and use their service and have used their service for a long time, it's great. It has helped. They've paid me to promote their stuff. So just full transparency there. If you click that link in the description, you'll get that discount, as I mentioned as well. And yeah, you can upload your music to the DistroKid service. So yeah, if you'd like to see something in particular on the next podcast, please let me know. You can post in the comments as well. And don't forget, you can listen to it on iTunes, and also you can find it at inthebluespodcast.com, usually a few days after it goes live on YouTube. YouTube's my biggest audience, so you get preference. A huge thanks also to the Patreon subscribers as well. I haven't had a Guitar Search Saturday go live. Usually I thank them at the end of those videos, but a huge thanks to the subscribers on Patreon as well. It keeps the show moving forward, and it's great to have such a loyal fan base as well as friends on the channel. So thank you so much, and a huge thanks to these guys that you can see on screen for supporting the show. Thanks again, guys. Take it easy. My name's Shane. A huge thanks also to Steve in Boston. I really appreciate you letting me use that clip. And guys, check out his channel. It's fantastic. He's a charismatic guy. The best live streams on YouTube are from his channel. You'll enjoy him. Trust me. Catch you soon, guys. See ya. We'll be right back.